Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'm talking with Dawson Church, author of the new book titled The Genie in Your Genes. And this really is a breakthrough book that links consciousness to genetic change, and it's very, very fascinating information. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about Dawson. Dawson Church is the author and editor of many books. He has collaborated with such best-selling authors as Robert Kiyosaki of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Deepak Chopra, John Gray of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and Wally Famous Amos. He is the founder of the Soul Medicine Institute, which researches and teaches emerging psychological and medical techniques that can yield fast and radical cures. His new book, The Genie in Your Genes, pioneers the practical use of epigenetics. I hope I pronounced that correctly. We'll get the clarity on that when we talk to Dawson. This explains the remarkable self-healing mechanisms now emerging from this science. It has been hailed as the brilliant breakthrough by leading scientists and has hit several bestseller lists within days of its release. So I'm just so happy to have Dawson Church on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Dawson.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great, great. So would you just start by telling us a little of your background and how you became interested in the mind-body connection to health?
Sure. I've been intrigued by the whole idea of the relationship between all the different aspects of being human. You know, we have these things called bodies. You know, you look down, you notice you have one.
Mm-hmm.
Look in the mirror, you discover you have a head. If you do any meditation or spiritual practice or go to church, you have probably picked up the notion somewhere along the line that you have a part of yourself that's immanent, the spirit, the soul. And also, as you went to school, you probably noticed you had a mind, and also later on as you became an adolescent and onwards, a heart, and you can feel things. So there are all these different parts of ourselves, and how they interact turns out to be inextricably linked. And so the therapies and the practices that affect all of them systemically are intriguing to me. And while a lot of modern medical research looks, for example, at drugs that will affect a particular molecule, it turns out that many things that affect our hearts, our minds, our spirits, affect our bodies quite globally. So a whole cascade of neurochemicals, of neurological changes, of changes down the level of the cell, and the molecules in the cell occur as parts of ourselves, like our emotions, our thoughts, our souls, are engaged. So I've been intrigued by this linkage between all these aspects of ourselves for many years. And just now, in the last few years, we're getting this remarkable, enormous explosion of research showing us exactly how, for example, our brains are literally changed by meditation. The neural pathways in our brains are changed by meditation. How, when we have various kinds of strong emotional responses, our genes, certain key genes in our immune system are turned on and off. So we're now not only suspecting that we work in these systemic global ways, but there's now a lot of amazing new research which shows the precise pathways by which these kinds of changes occur in the body.
It's really amazing, amazing stuff. Now, I know that the whole mind-body health movement kind of started in the 80s, and I think that that's when you were really helping a lot of authors with their books. What was it about the 80s that sparked all of this new information?
What sparked this shift in the 80s was the very, very first scientific studies which began to show these links, or actually, I think less the first studies than the sudden realization that science had been pointing us to a realization of this link for actually quite a long time, and we just hadn't picked it up. So, for example, when Larry Darcy, I did an anthology in the mid-80s called The Heart of the Healer, and it had Bernie Siegel, who wrote Love, Medicine, and Miracles, had Larry Darcy, who wrote Prayer is Good Medicine. It had many other Norman Cousins who really helped people understand the body-mind connection, one of the first pioneers in that field.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly these pioneers began to point out that there was actually quite an impressive group of experiments which show this link. So we had anecdotal stories like Norman Cousins and Bernie Siegel's cancer patients showing us that as people's thoughts and beliefs changed, their bodies changed. But then we also had people like Larry Darcy and a psychiatrist called Dan Benor, and they began showing us in the 80s that, hey, if you look back at the research papers that have been published in the last 15 or so years, there are actually quite a lot of them, and when we put them all together in a single group, they paint this picture that there's this intimate connection between all these parts of us and that it's quite well documented in medical literature. So that was really what began to happen in the 80s. It began to move from the realm of mysticism and belief and thought that, hey, maybe there's a link between these things to here's some hard scientific evidence that we can see things changing in our bodies like our neural patterns when our emotions, our beliefs, our thoughts, and all of these invisible aspects of us change.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't really realize that there are so many scientific tests that are being done in this area. You know, I think that they kind of still put it in that realm of kind of alternative, but maybe it's just all in the mind. It's not really, you know, there's no scientific basis of it. So why don't you talk a little to the science of it and then explain what epigenetics is?
It's not just that there is science behind it, it's that it is some of the most exciting new frontiers of research right now. It's hard to find things a lot more exciting than what's going on in this field right now.
Yeah.
And epigenetics really embodies this revolution to me because epi means above or beyond, outside the level of the gene. And epigenetics studies genes that get affected, turned on or turned off in various ways by forces outside the gene or outside the cell. And so the realization, you know, the old sort of model was called the central dogma of molecular biology, was that all the information was in the genes, that these genes were self-activating, that they had this blueprint in them, and that this blueprint drove all the processes of life. And it was true as far as it went. You need the blueprint to produce all of these aspects of the way our cells function. But epigenetics began to point out that, hey, to use a blueprint, you need to read the blueprint, unwrap the blueprint, and then act on the blueprint. And that there's something telling our bodies to act on these particular blueprints. For example, we have certain stress genes in our brains.
Mm-hmm.
And what is telling those stress genes to activate to help dampen our stress response or to help get our stress response going? There has to be a signal. Something has to come from the outside and say, hey, gene, turn on. There's stress happening right now. So we began to realize that that DNA wasn't the source of all this information and wasn't what was determining what was happening with these genes. It was signals from outside the cell. And so this whole field, roughly 10 years ago, this whole field of epigenetics began to be defined and born, and with it the realization that these signals from outside the cell, some of which occur through thought and emotion, through prayer, through belief, through all of these, through visualization, through all of these non-physical mechanisms, actually have significant physical results in our bodies.
So, Dawson, what exactly is a gene?
A gene, to put it very simply, is a strand of DNA in our chromosome, in all of our cells, that contains the instructions for building a particular protein. So a gene is a little length of DNA that tells our body how to build a particular protein. And so And proteins, again, everything in our bodies is composed of protein and a few other substances. So all of the molecules of life, protos is a Greek word for meaning our primary importance. So proteins are these big complex molecules in our bodies that are of primary importance not only to the functioning of our bodies but to the structure of our cells, like the microtubules that give the girders that hold our cells together are proteins. The cell membranes are proteins. So all of these proteins are in our bodies and are being made every moment of our lives, and the instructions for how to build a particular protein reside in that little length of DNA called a gene.
So I know that you've stated that there are over 100 genes in the body that can be activated by our thoughts and our feelings and our experiences, and that this will affect our immune system, our resistance to disease. So are you saying that there are genes that we can change consciously and there are genes that we can't?
Yes. Many of our genes operate on autopilot, or they are turned on at a certain point. You know, the genes for things like eye color and height and hair color, the growth. Many of these things happen and are not affected, as far as I can tell, by conscious processes.
Okay.
But there are many genes that are affected by conscious processes or unconscious ones. And these 100 genes I'm referring to in the book repeatedly are called early genes, and they are regulatory genes that regulate the expression of other genes or that build certain crucial proteins. And just for example, one of them is responsible for your making some of the substances that allow you to respond quickly to a threat from the outside. So when, for example, there's a barking dog that runs at you, when somebody swerves in front of you in the freeway, and you have to react very, very quickly, there are these genes that produce these hormones like cortisol, adrenaline, norepinephrine, and so on, and they tell your body, hey, there's a problem out there in the environment, and it translates that problem very quickly into a biochemical signal that results in you being able to take action, like run away from the dog or swerve to avoid the other car.
Mm-hmm.
These genes turn on or off within a second or two, and again, they affect a whole host of other systems in your body. So these genes are, again, that gene is not under your conscious control deliberately, but if you think about that dog, or you think about that car on the highway, or if you think about that terrible problem you had as a child, or if you think about or feel strongly, say for example you're a soldier that's come back from Iraq with post-traumatic stress syndrome, and you saw horrible things, and you think about them, or they weigh on you, or you feel them strongly, you are engaging that stress response over and over and over again. So our ability through prayer, through belief, through meditation, through various kinds of techniques called energy psychology, our ability to deal with these psychological stressors is having a big effect on our body, and that's the part that's under our conscious control to some degree. So if you have a belief that's distressing you, think about changing that belief. If you have a psychological trauma from your childhood, again, these techniques from energy psychology can very, very quickly release the emotional intensity of that childhood belief and then deactivate the stress response that is engaging these early genes in producing these stress neurochemicals in your body.
That is just fascinating. So would you tell us about your book, The Genie in Your Genes, and what readers can expect from it?
I certainly would love to. And The Genie in Your Genes is a book I wrote because I was so struck by how much science there is that is explaining these kinds of our responses, how intimately our genes work together with our nervous systems, and also other parts of our bodies, and how we operate in this remarkable symphony of cellular harmony and protein synthesis through our genes, but also how amazing it is to when we use some of these techniques, for example, from energy psychology, that quickly there's this big sequence of shifts in our bodies. So I wanted to have a book which sort of summed up all the science, all the amazing, remarkable, almost miraculous effects that sometimes occur from these therapies. And they seem like miracles. For example, if you take somebody, like for example, I had a woman in a seminar a few months ago, and I often ask for volunteers when I speak before groups, and this woman walked up and she was dealing with a stress, and the whole left side of her body was frozen. Her face was frozen, her shoulder, her left shoulder was frozen. She had very limited range of motion in her arm. She could hardly move her arm at all. And as she was describing the underlying emotional stresses behind this physical impairment, her story was quite heart-wrenching. Her son had been kidnapped some years before, and eventually been murdered by his kidnappers.
Oh, boy.
And it just so happened that the day of my seminar was the anniversary of his death.
Wow.
So there she was with this huge emotional trauma. Mm-hmm. It's the anniversary. It's bringing it up for her. She wasn't crying. She didn't seem emotionally affected, but her whole left side of her body was frozen. And So, again, this energy work just works on the energy system of the body, the electrical system of the body. It doesn't try and work on the psychological aspects. So I just did maybe 5 minutes of energy work with her, and there was a huge shift in the way she felt. And when she left the seminar, she was waving her left arm around in great big circles. She had complete mobility of her arm. So physically, that all shifted because energetically, we were able to discharge the emotional intensity of the stress reaction she had psychologically to her son's death.
That's amazing.
Now,
and it can happen that quickly.
It can happen that quickly.
That is incredible.
So when you see these kinds of, and again, I've seen so many of these kinds of changes on my website. There's a movie, actually there's a couple of different movies, of people, for example, with height phobias. And so there's actually a video of this woman who had a height phobia, and she couldn't even go near a window if she was high up in a building. She had such a strong phobia. And after, again, a very short period of treatment, about 12, 15 minutes of treatment, she was just walking out onto the balcony and looking down at the city of Miami and saying, wow, it's beautiful out here.
Oh,
so even these long-standing phobias, we're working now, for example, with Iraq veterans,
mm-hmm.
and we're working with them energy treatments to resolve very, very deep and complex issues called post-traumatic stress syndrome, or PTSD. So it's amazing. You see these people and you work on the emotional issues, and suddenly a whole raft of physical issues they have can go away.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens very, very quickly. Again, you know, working again at this genetic level, at this energy level, you can tackle issues that conventional medicine would take a long time to have an effect on. So when you're doing this along with your conventional treatments, it can be very effective in resolving these issues in time frames that seem like they're just absolutely miraculous to people who are accustomed to taking a long time to heal.
Now, is there anything that you would not suggest using these kind of therapies with?
No, I think that you can use these therapies with pretty much anything. For example, there's a big cancer hospital called the MD Anderson Cancer Clinic and has branches in several different states. It's one of the leading cancer treatment centers in the U.S. And they have an energy medicine program in their hospital in Orlando, Florida. So people are going for their chemotherapy and radiation and other cancer treatments, but alongside that, they have the option of getting energy medicine treatments. And what they're finding is that the energy medicine helps them tolerate the chemotherapy much better.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're having totally conventional therapy, now, of course, there are people who say to themselves, other people have said, well, do I want to have conventional therapy? And maybe I will just elect to have energy therapy and see what happens. And that's a choice some patients have made. But whether you have only conventional therapy, whether you have conventional therapy alongside energy therapy, whatever you elect as your treatment program, there can be an effect from things like beliefs, thoughts, attitudes, visualizations. So I encourage people, whatever you're doing by way of medical treatment, make sure you engage your belief system, engage your heart, engage the love of the people around you, engage your community. Use all your resources for healing. Don't just rely on one method, one modality, one set of ideas to improve your physical health.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that some people may be somewhat confused by the word energy when you're referring to energy medicine or energy psychology. Can you maybe explain that word when it's used in this context? And then where is the healing power of these concepts of energy medicine and energy psychology, where the healing power actually is within those modalities?
Yes, it's actually very simple. We began to become aware of the power of energy in the human form. Actually, the Chinese discovered it a long time ago with what they call the meridians that are used in acupuncture. And that system is, you know, certainly 2,000 years old, perhaps a lot older.
Mm-hmm.
But in the West, it really began in the 20s with the discovery of the electrical field of the heart. So in 1924, the Nobel Prize for Medicine went to a doctor called Willem Enthoven, and he discovered the electrical field of the heart. He discovered that the heart, the organ of physical hearts, have a strong electrical field. Later on, Hans Berger, another doctor, discovered the electrical field of the brain, and that's led to the development of things like the EEG and the EKG, which measure these electrical rhythms. And there's a huge, huge body of research on electricity and medicine, but what we found essentially is that our cells have electrical fields, our organs have electrical fields, and that this is critical. By changing the electrical field of the organ or the cell, you change its physical function. And this is a critical point. So what these therapies do, energy psychology does this very, very simply by rubbing or massaging or tapping on the body, creating a small electrical charge, which when it is in conjunction with the recollection, the memory of a traumatic event, can change the charge on the cells and the organs in which that traumatic memory is stored and very quickly release that trauma again through this weak electrical signal generated by tapping or rubbing or other kinds of physical manipulation. So we've learned both to have wonderful machines that engage our body's energy system, like the pacemaker, like the EKG and the EEG, CAT scans, things like that. But we've also learned to do it physically without machines, with things like massage, again, energy medicine, laying out of hands, faith healing, all of these, prayer, all of these things are able to engage these same fields, again, with just human intent and human-scale, high-touch kinds of therapies. So there are both these high-tech therapies and also these high-touch therapies, which engage the human energy field for healing.
Now, in your book, do you go into the various modalities that you would consider under the umbrella of energy medicine and energy psychology?
Yes, I list them, and I call them epigenetic health interventions. And what I mean by that is that these are all this collection of therapies. It are all therapies that are affecting these genes epigenetically. So from outside the cell, we're sending the cell signals that can help in the healing process by using these therapies. I list them in the book. And, there are maybe 10, 15 of them. They're not huge numbers of them, but, they form a coherent group. Again, things like thought, strong emotion, mm-hmm. prayer, visualization, belief, energy medicine, and so on.
Great. So, you talked about trauma and how trauma can lock up or freeze up parts of our body. How does that exactly happen? And, is that both emotional and physical trauma that we can hold in the body?
Yes. We used to think in the early days of brain research that it was all held in the mind or the brain. And we also looked for for consciousness and for the mind in the brain, and we assumed that consciousness was like this, this offshoot of the mind and the brain. But what we discovered in the last, starting maybe 30 years ago, is that that model of consciousness being linked inextricably to the mind and the brain is a limited one, and actually it's a much bigger picture. So when you have, for example, an emotional trauma, it doesn't just reside in a neural pathway in the brain. It also resides in the body. For example, this woman with a frozen shoulder, I asked her to do two things. I asked her to find where in her body, when she thought of her son's death, that the feeling or the emotion was strongest. So I had her tune into her body and find a place in her body, because again, we aren't storing memories just in our heads and our minds and our brains. They're also distributed in our muscles and our organs and our bodies. So finding out where that memory is held is important. And I also, in front of a whole group of people and with a limited time, I couldn't work on every single aspect of her son's kidnapping and death. Mm-hmm. But I was able to find one pivotal moment in the whole sequence of traumas, and that was when she got the phone call saying her son's body had been found. That looked to me from her body language as though it was the central moment, the pivotal moment in the whole sequence of events. So once she'd found the physical location in her body, which was her heart, unsurprisingly, and we found the pivotal psychological moment, which was the phone call, then again, just by with a little bit of rubbing and tapping and generation of these electrical signals using energy psychology, that whole matrix of energy could be quickly shifted and released, resulting in the physical changes. So again, our bodies, minds, hearts, spirits, and electrical bodies are so intimately linked, whether when you affect one of these things, you affect the others.
So do you think that the cells of our body has a natural inclination towards health, and maybe the mind is just getting in the way?
Yes, I think our bodies desperately want to heal, and that sometimes what we think of as disease is the attempt of the body to heal as well. And often, though, there's just some kind of obstacle. And that might be a physical obstacle, it might be a pollution or toxic obstacle from the environment, but even things like allergies, energy psychology works very successfully with allergies. On one of my research websites, we have accounts of allergies that are professionally reviewed by doctors or therapists and then posted. And one is an account of a woman with 80 identified allergies.
Wow.
Lots of allergies. Her husband called her the woman in the bubble. She was allergic to everything around her. Mm. And she tried all kinds of treatments and they hadn't been effective. She then tried energy psychology, and within about 2 weeks, she'd resolved all of the allergies and was allergy free. So there are these environmental issues that can be pushing us toward illness. But even those, often we can affect or sometimes eliminate by working on our energy bodies. So these things are very effective. And again, because we're so linked, if you make a change in one part of the system, you affect the whole system. It's like having two magnets next to each other, and they will be affecting anything metal between them. But if you change the position or the strength of one magnet, then the position of the other magnet can change, and whatever is between them, the iron filings or whatever, will change, will shift as well. As you make any change to the energy of one side of the equation, mm-hmm. everything on the other side changes too.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. So, I really would like you to address the issue of stress, because it's almost become a defining state of mind for the times that we're living in right now. There's something out there to stress out all of us between work, relationships, traffic, what we see on the news. So I'd love to hear about your thoughts on stress and the detrimental effects that that happen in the body on a chemical level in regards to stress?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that maybe a dog runs and barks at you, or you have a near miss on the freeway, and our body has this marvelous system to translate that external environmental signal of the threat from the environment into an internal biological signal that allows us to take rapid evasive action. So it's called an adaptive mechanism. It helps us adapt. It helps us live our lives more successfully to get out of the way of the car or the dog. So while this biological response is a wonderful gift to us in its proper place, the problem arises if we have chronic stress. And if our body is secreting, for example, cortisol, which is helping us with this rapid avoidance of a threat, but if we, what we as human beings have is an ability that no other animal has, which is that we can imagine possible future imaginary threats.
Mm.
And when we do that, when we think about a threat, when we think about a resentment of our husband or our boss or our wife or our child or our parent or whatever, when we just think about that, we're activating many of the same kinds of stress responses in our body if there is an actual threat. So, you know, if your dog or your cat has a problem, if a dog runs at your cat and your cat runs away, your cat will have the same stress response, but after that, it'll just go lay down somewhere and relax.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do, though, of course, what we human beings can do with our magnificent brains is we can keep on recreating that stress over and over and over mm-hmm. and over and over again. And, of course, most of the bad things you think about never happen.
Right.
But you're producing the same stress response in your body. So all the stress biochemistry is being engaged. And when it's engaged, Juanita, it then can stay active for a long time, and that is the problem. It isn't having the stress response, the momentary stress response. It's when we have that repeated stress response and are producing the stress response in our body over a period of months, days, hours, weeks, years, whatever. And that's where the corrosive effects happen, because our bodies are not designed to cope with these stress biochemicals for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a high cortisol level, for example, for protracted periods of time, high stress, again, your body's producing these high cortisol levels, these high levels of stress genes in your bloodstream, The effects of high cortisol over long periods of time are terrible. They include increased wrinkling of the skin and loss of elasticity in the skin. They increased joint degeneration. Mm. They include the rapid aging of cells and a starvation of the cells of the hormones required to promote cell growth and repair. They include the loss of short-term memory and damage to the brain. All kinds of things happen. And so it's really important whenever we have these stressors, we have tools to release them. And in this book, I list a few of these simple tools. Again, most of them are just so blindingly obvious and simple that like this one routine called Emotional Freedom Techniques, which is, I think, on page 327. And it's just one page, and it takes about 1 minute. And that one little technique can completely shut off the stress response in a few seconds. So we have these great tools now at our disposal that don't take a doctor or a hospital or a psychiatrist. Very, very quickly, we can, without any kind of outside intervention, we can do this work on ourselves and release those stresses and get back to that baseline of relaxation that your dog or your cat would get back to after it's been exposed to a stress.
I think just for that, Dawson, we all need a copy of your book. That's incredible, incredible. So what you're really saying is that the mind doesn't differentiate between what's really happening and what's happening in the imagination?
No, if you have a strong visualization of a problem, or say you have a strong visualization of healing, that by itself, your mind, your body's making no moral judgment about your thoughts. It's just saying, oh, there's a picture of a threat or a wonderful healing image, and it's responding accordingly.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. So do you think that people are really ready for the responsibility of this, that knowing that they have the power within themselves, in their own consciousness, to change their state of health?
That is a great question. And I think the answer is yes and no.
Of course.
Yeah, and some people are willing to, willing and ready to shift, and others are. One of the things in the healing arts is that you talk to doctors and therapists and people with wonderful, compassionate intentions to their patients and clients, and one of the heart-wrenching things is some people are just not ready or willing to change, and you can they can be doing something which is affecting them really negatively. If, for example, a person who picks abusive relationship partners, for example, you'll find people who do this over and over and over again. They'll pick relationship partners who hurt them, and you think, why on earth would they go back to that kind of negative behavior? And the answer is that it's actually quite hard to change the kinds of emotional and physical states we used to. So if people are abused, for example, as children, they'll go back to abusive relationships over and over again in their lives because that's the internal biochemistry they used to. Mm-hmm. This makes sense. This is how their body feels good. And if they try a healthy behavior, it actually feels wrong inside their body. It's like taking a cup of coffee and dumping salt into the sugar in the body.
Wow.
Your internal biochemistry is all wigged out if you were the healthy person. If you're used to abusive ones, so change biochemically, change is very hard, and that's why I'm such an advocate of energy therapies, because when we change the energy, suddenly you can bypass all of those attempts to change the mind. It's hard to change people's minds, but it's actually easy to change their energy. We're changing energy every day with our thoughts and feelings, and talented therapists and energy workers can shift those energy patterns very, very quickly. Often people aren't ready for change, or they're so addicted to their old systems that they can't shift them. But with energy, again, we can do things that you just have a hard time doing otherwise without those sorts of resources.
Hmm. So where do you think we're going in the future with this technology, this kind of information of the mind-body connection?
I think we're going to have a revolution in medicine and psychology in the next probably in the next 5 years, it'll be very obvious. And in the next 10 years, I think that hospitals and outpatient centers will look very different from the way they do today. I think that there's a lot of research happening now on these kinds of methods. For example, there's a big HMO in California called Kaiser Permanente, and they've just done a study of weight loss techniques, and they've compared their very best stuff. So again, they're HMO, they want their patients to be healthy and lose weight. So they've taken their very best weight loss techniques, and they've compared them to energy psychology. And in a study published a few months back, they found that the energy psychology technique worked way better than the best stuff they had already. So as big hospital chains begin to realize that, hey, energy techniques can help with things like weight loss, like with stopping smoking, with phobias, with depression. I'm doing a study right now. I'm getting ready for publication of taking a highly depressed patient and doing just energy work. And the shift is amazing when we score her on standardized test instruments, that she has an enormous shift in her depression, and over time it holds. So months later, she's still at a much lower level of depression than she was before treatment with just one energy treatment. So as medicine and psychology begins to realize these things and test these things, and of course some of them won't work, some will. As we find the best ones, though, we will increasingly intervene on the energy level, and we will we'll of course have all of the physical interventions as well, like drugs and surgery, at our disposal too. But when we ally the best of modern biomedicine with energy techniques, suddenly we will have a much, much greater array of options available for healing. So we'll start to see people healed from things, I think, that were very difficult to heal from with just a limited subset of working just with the physical level of the body. And I think that's the big, big change that will happen in the next while. And we'll start to produce these stress-free people that are extraordinarily healthy. I've watched people who've been doing this kind of work on themselves for, you know, for maybe 10, 20 years. And there are some phenomenally healthy people out there as you resolve these things over and over and over again as these stresses appear in your life. Once you let them go, suddenly you unlock a level of well-being, just of simply feeling good in your body that you never knew you had before.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a beautiful, beautiful vision for the future. So how, Dawson, can readers find out more about you and your book, The Genie in Your Genes?
The website is geniebestseller.com, and it also has links to my research institute, which is called Soul Medicine Institute, and that's where doctors and therapists and researchers can go to get some information about research we're doing or other people's research. But the geniebestseller.com site is the best one to get the book, and the book, again, has all the details of past research, current research, and it's put in a very user-friendly way. So it's not a book for the research scientist. It's a book for the average person.
Okay, great, great. So our time is coming to an end. I actually kept you a little longer than I expected today, but the information is just amazing, Dawson. So do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share?
My final thought, Vanita, is love yourself. If we just relax and love ourselves, if whenever we're stressed, if whatever's bothering us, do whatever it takes. Do prayer. You know, go see your priest, your rabbi, your minister, your whatever to release that. Have people pray for you. Engage the support of your friends and family. Find people who love you and surround yourself with them. Surround yourself with positive images, media, books. Meditate every day. The health benefits of meditation are fantastic. Learn energy psychology techniques. Again, that page in my book is one page. It is so simple to do to release those stresses. All of these things, they're loving your body, they're loving your mind, they're loving your spirit. And suddenly you find yourself in this beautiful, relaxed state of flow, synchronicity, beauty, love every day. And that is a magnificent place in which to live your life. So that's my ultimate advice, is just find every possible way of loving yourself.
Great final thoughts. Thanks so much, Dawson.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks.
Appreciate your time today. You take care.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, listeners, what a great interview. This has been Dawson Church. His book, again, is The Genie in Your Genes. His website, www.geniebestseller.com, as well, www.soulmedicineinstitute.org. So check out those websites. Look for this book. It's available in stores now, as well as through Dawson's website and online booksellers. Thanks so much for listening. Oh, one more thing. If you'd like to read a recent book review and online interview with Dawson Church, you can go to readerviews.com. So thanks so much. This has been Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.